Chapter 30. I am ready. I step into the room, armed not with a gun or a knife, but with the plan I made the night before. Tobias said that stage 3 is about mental preparation, coming up with strategies to overcome my fears. I wish I knew what order the fears will come in. I bounce on the balls of my feet as I wait for the first fear to appear. I am already short of breath. The ground beneath me changes. Grass rises from the concrete and sways in a wind I cannot feel. A green sky replaces the exposed pipes above me. I listen for the birds and feel my fear as a distant thing, a hammering heart and a squeezed chest, but not something that exists in my mind. Tobias told me to figure out what the simulation means. He was right. It isn't about the birds. It's about control. Wings flap next to my ear, and the crow's talons dig into my shoulder. This time, I do not hit the bird as hard as I can. I crouch, listening to the thunder of wings behind me, and run my hand through the grass just above the ground. What combats powerlessness? Power. And the first time I felt powerful in the Dauntless compound was when I was holding a gun. A lump forms in my throat, and I want the talons off. The bird squawks and my stomach clenches, but then I feel something hard and metal in the grass. My gun. I point the gun at the bird on my shoulder, and it detaches from my shirt in an explosion of blood and feathers. I spin on my heel, aiming the gun at the sky, and see the cloud of dark feathers descending. I squeeze the trigger, firing again and again into the sea of birds above me, watching their dark bodies drop to the grass. As I aim and shoot, I feel the same rush of power I felt the first time I held a gun. My heart stops racing, and the field, gun, and birds fade away. I stand in the dark again. I shift my weight, and something squeaks beneath my foot. I crouch down and slide my hand along a cold, smooth panel. Glass. I press my hands to glass on either side of my body. The tank again. I'm not afraid of drowning. This is not about the water. It is about my inability to escape the tank. It is about weakness. I just have to convince myself that I'm strong enough to break the glass. The blue lights come on, and water slips over the floor. But I don't let the simulation get that far. I slam my palm against the wall in front of me, expecting the pain to break. My hand bounces off, causing no damage. My heartbeat speeds up. What if what worked in the first simulation doesn't work here? What if I can't break the glass unless I'm under duress? The water laps over my ankles, flowing faster by the second. I have to calm down and focus. I lean against the wall behind me and kick as hard as I can, and again. My toes throb, but nothing happens. I have another option. I can wait for water to fill the tank, and it's already at my knees, and try to calm down as I drown. I brace myself against the wall, shaking my head. No, I can't let myself drown. I can't. I ball my hands up into fists and pound on the wall. I am stronger than the glass. The glass is as thin as newly frozen ice. My mind will make it so. I close my eyes. The glass is ice. The glass is ice. The glass is... The glass shatters under my hand, and water spills onto the floor. And then the dark returns. I shake out my hands. That should have been an easy obstacle to overcome. I faced it before in simulations. I can't afford to lose time like that again. What feels like a solid wall hits me from the side, forcing the air from my lungs, and I fall hard, gasping. I can't swim. I've only seen bodies of water this large, this powerful in pictures. Beneath me is a rock with a jagged edge, slick with water. The water pulls at my legs, and I cling to the rock, tasting salt on my lips. Out of the corner of my eye, I see a dark sky and a blood-red moon. Another wave hits, slamming against my back. I hit my chin against the stone and wince. The sea is cold, but my blood is hot, running down my neck. I stretch my arm and find the edge of the rock. The water pulls at my legs with irresistible force. I cling as hard as I can, but I'm not strong enough. The water pulls me, and the wave throws my body back. It flings my legs over my head and my arms to each side, and I collide with the stone, my back pressed against it, water gushing over my face. My lungs scream for air. I twist and grab the edge of the rock, pulling myself above the water. I gasp, and another wave hits me, this one harder than the first, but I have a better hold. I must not really be afraid of the water. I must be afraid of being out of control. To face it, I have to regain control. With a scream of frustration, I throw my hand forward and find a hole in the rock. My arms shake violently as I drag myself forward, and I pull my feet up under me before the wave can take me with it. Once my feet are free, I get up and throw my body into a run, into a sprint. My feet quick on the stone, the red moon in front of me, the ocean gone. Then everything is gone, and my body is still, too still. I try to move my arms, but they are bound tightly to my sides. I look down and see rope wrapped around my chest, my arms, my legs. A stack of logs rises around my feet, and I see a pole behind me. I am high above the ground. People creep out of the shadows, and their faces are familiar. They are the initiates, carrying torches, and Peter is at the front of the pack. His eyes look like black pits, and he wears a smirk that spreads too wide across his face, forcing wrinkles into his cheeks. A laugh starts somewhere in the center of the crowd and rises as voice after voice joins it. Cackling is all I hear. As the cackling grows louder, Peter lowers his torch to the wood, and flames leap up near the ground. They flicker at the edges of each log and then creep over the bark. I don't struggle against the ropes, as I did the first time I faced this fear. Instead, I close my eyes and gulp as much air as I can. This is a simulation. It can't hurt me. The heat from the flames rises around me. I shake my head. "Smell that stiff?" Peter says, his voice louder than even the cackling. "No," I say. The flames are getting higher. He sniffs. "That's the smell of your burning flesh." When I open my eyes, my vision is blurry with tears. "Know what I smell?" My voice strains to be louder than the laughter all around me. The laughter that oppresses me as much as the heat. My arms twitch, and I want to fight against the ropes, but I won't. I won't struggle pointlessly. I won't panic. I stare through the flames at Peter, the heat bringing blood to the surface of my skin, flowing through me, melting the toes of my shoes. "I smell rain," I say. Thunder roars above my head, and I scream as a flame touches my fingertips and pain shrieks over my skin. I tilt my head back and focus on the clouds gathering above my head, heavy with rain, dark with rain. A line of lightning sprawls over the sky and I feel the first drop on my forehead. Faster, faster. The drop rolls down the side of my nose and the second drop hits my shoulder, so big it feels like it's made of ice or rock instead of water. Sheets of rain fall around me and I hear sizzling over the laughter. I smile, relieved, as the rain puts out the fire and soothes the burns on my hands. The ropes fall away, and I push my hands through my hair. I wish I was like Tobias and had only 4 fears to face, but I am not that fearless. I smooth my shirt down, and when I look up, I stand in my bedroom in the abnegation sector of the city. I have never faced this fear before. The lights are off, but the room is lit by the moonlight coming through the windows. One of my walls is covered with mirrors. I turn toward it, confused. That isn't right. I'm not allowed to have mirrors. I look at the reflection in the mirror. My wide eyes, the bed with the gray sheets pulled taut, the dresser that holds my clothes, the bookcase, the bare walls. My eyes skip to the window behind me, and to the man, standing just outside. Cold drops down my spine like a bead of sweat, and my body goes rigid. I recognize him. He is the man with the scarred face from the aptitude test. He wears black and he stands still as a statue. I blink, and 2 men appear at his left and right, just as still as he is, but their faces are featureless, skin-covered skulls.